Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk again about the Kingdom of God. We're going to jump around a little bit, do a little rabbit trailing in order to get our bearings, and then we're going to talk about kings and priests. And I'll give you a little bit of history of some of the things that happened this week. We butchered a local cow that we raised up from a calf. It's been on the place for probably about 15 years. It was an old cow, could barely get around. We kept it off of the desert pastures this year and put it on green pastures right near the place. And finally, a couple of weeks ago, we went out and shot it and skinned it and hung it up in a cool place and let it hang for at least 10 days. And then yesterday we cut her up and put it into bags and ground it and turned it into hamburger for meat and produced about 500 pounds of boneless meat and probably another 100 pounds of scrap that will go to chickens and dogs and cats instead of buying food for them in the stores, which is probably not good for them anyway. And we put some pictures up on the internet of some of the process. Guys standing over a table slicing large, you know, 5-pound chunks of meat off of a cow that stretched out over from the top beam of about 12 feet. And somebody wrote back, kind of takes the fun out of eating beef. And he put a little smiley face there. And, of course, to a lot of people, it's all shocking that, you know, you would actually kill this animal and skin it out and cut up its meat and eat it, because they are so far removed from that idea. Now, I mean, they don't mind stopping at McDonald's and eating a hamburger, even though it's been soaked in ammonia and treated and bleached and everything else. And then finally, with all of its other elements to its production, fed to you as if it's real food. But you don't want to actually go out and kill the meat that you're going to eat. Now, a lot of people, that's not a big deal. They're hunters. Some people do live on farms. But a huge amount of people in America are now living in cities. They meat comes from the store. They don't understand where it comes from. We sold, actually, we have 4 cows this year that we were going to turn over and not keep. They were getting old. 2 of them we loaded on a truck when we sold the calves. And we were kind of worried. I really felt bad about loading them on the truck because, I mean, these cows had been with us all their lives. And here we are loading them on a truck and selling them. And they're going to go off and they'll be on this truck and have this ride. They'd never ridden on a truck before. And now they're going to ride on a truck for hours. And then they're going to put it in another feedlot where they don't know any of the other cows. And they're not going to be in green fields, and then they're going to be moved in another truck and finally go to the slaughterhouse and then moved down there and killed and cut up. Now, you don't have to get all sentimental about it, but the fact is these cows have been, you know, we name our cows. We know them. I joke around with people and says, well, I never eat anybody I don't know because we produce our own food. And it's a kind of a symbiotic relation. You know, when some of these cows had their calves, and even when some of these cows were born, we were out there in the snowstorms, and they're part of our life and we're a part of theirs. We make it possible that they live. We hay in the summertime and bring them food in the wintertime when feed is scarce, and it keeps them healthy. But we can't eat every old cow on the place. We're just not going to eat that much meat. We do share it with other people that are a part of our network, if they're close enough to come and get it. And we teach other people how to do these things. We'll actually butcher another cow later on, probably in January or February, when other people are out visiting. And we'll show them how to do it. And it's part of these things that we've been removed from in our society. And it changes our view that we're not a part of that. Our kids grew up knowing you know, the idea of eating a sheep that you know, it's not a problem. They understand the process. They understand that we give life to the sheep. A number of vegetarian extremists say, oh, no, you don't want to have any farms. Well, if you don't have any farms, you're not going to have any sheep. Because somebody's got to be haying for them, and somebody's got to be taking care of them, and somebody's got to be doing all these things that are necessary that they live, because they're domesticated. They're not wild deer. Even the wild deer, occasionally you need to go out and shoot a cougar or two, because I've seen the cougars get so thick out here that herds of several hundred deer were down to about 14 deer by the end of the winter. And that's not good management, to let that many cougars be devouring all the deer in the herd. But that's not my job. I'm not allowed to do that. That's supposedly the job of government, which brings us to another idea. This used to be the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. And it was literally the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. But now it's the government of their representatives. And their representatives are not just representatives. Their representatives are lawmakers. So you get to try to elect somebody who's going to go out and govern you. They're going to make laws. They're going to make regulations. They're going to govern you. They're going to regulate every aspect of your life. You get to pick your new king every few years. And you're competing against all the other people who want all these benefits at your expense. So if you're a hard worker, they want to take more from you. If you produce more, they want to take more. You know, I heard an interesting statistic that in one of these countries, Great Britain, they want, everybody said, let's tax the rich, let's tax the rich. They're not paying their fair share, and we have to tax the rich. And that's, we're hearing that in this government all the time. At least one element is talking about taxing the rich, like that's ever going to really happen. You increase the taxes on the rich. Go ahead. The rich are not rich because they're stupid. When they increased the taxes on the rich in England, everybody who made over £1 million was supposed to pay this really high tax rate. Suddenly, everybody who usually made over £1 million didn't make over £1 million anymore. And they actually collected less money from the rich after they passed that law. Because the rich just went out and figured out another way of making money that is going to navigate around that tax. They put their money in trusts and foundations and what have you. And they still made the money. It just wasn't taxable. Because they put it in legal tax shelters. And you say, oh, well, we got to get guys in there to change that. The guys that get in there because big money supports them. What they're telling you about taxing the rich, that's just lip service. That's not going to happen. You're living a pipe dream. You're actually in what you're going to hear me talk about a lot, cognitive dissonance. They've got CD, cognitive dissonance. I might as well start calling it that. I never used that. They got CD. and some people got TCD, terminal cognitive dissonance. They're going to die stupid. Cognitive dissonance is when you have two ideas trying to be accepted and held in the same brain at the same time that are contradictory. And this is what most Americans, most people in the world today are suffering from. They want to believe two different things are true that are conflicting. And I can find this at almost every level of people's life, that they believe this to be true and they believe this to be true, but they can't both be true. It's kind of like the scene in Fiddler on the Roof, where one fellow says one thing and Tevye says, you're right. And another fellow says just the opposite. And he says, you know, you are also right. And the third fellow says, wait a minute, he's right and he's right? They can't both be right. And Tevye looks at the third guy and says, you are also right. Everybody's right from a certain point of view, but contrary facts are contrary facts. They conflict. And you know, recently we've had this whole thing on gun control and people in schools and they've created this thing where they make schools gun-free zones. And they call it zero tolerance. They won't let anybody have a gun in the school. Teachers can't have a gun in the school. Faculty, administration, none of them can have a gun in the school. Now, I can understand saying the students can't bring a gun to school, although the last attempt at a mass shooting in Israel, where the teachers are armed, the guy was stopped by a part-time student who had a gun. And in Israel, the teachers are not only allowed to bring guns, they're allowed to bring what you like to call assault weapons. Because they understand that every assault weapon is also an anti-assault weapon. It will stop somebody with an assault weapon who's misusing it. Now, you have to assume that most of the people that are in your neighborhood or in your community are genuinely decent people. They may be cowards and be afraid to own a gun, but they're generally decent people. And cowards, you don't have to worry about them usually, because they're not going to shoot up anybody. Unless, of course, they're in a gun-free zone, because that's where all these cowards go to. All these madmen, they go to gun-free zones. And we talked about this in a previous show, how the fellow I knew who got all upset and he punched the wall because he was trying to quit smoking. He was all on edge, and he just lost his temper and punched the wall. And I warned him that, I said, you were lucky you didn't hit the stud. You were just inches away. And he says, oh, I was angry, but I wasn't stupid. So he had enough presence of mind not to punch where the stud was, but he didn't have enough presence of mind not to punch at all. Well, these crazy people, they're crazy, but they're not stupid. They're not going to go to the gun range. They're not going to go to the rifle range. They're not going to go to the gun show and try this. They're going to go to the gun-free zone. And we know this. This happens time and time and time again. They go to gun-free zones. Even the one here in Clackamas went to a gun-free zone, which was a mall, and he started shooting people. Unfortunately, somebody was in the mall who had broken the rules and brought in a gun. And he immediately pulled it out, pointed it at the guy. The guy was so shocked and so frightened that he ran down the hall and shot himself. And he stopped killing people because there was this gun. And this is the way it works. So, but there was a cognitive dissonance. He wants to kill himself. He wants to kill all these other people. But he's afraid, and he's trying to prove his bravery, which is compensation. But he goes to a gun-free zone. That's where he goes. He's not brave enough to just go shoot himself. He's not brave enough to, have a shootout with other armed people. He goes to where he knows he'll be safe. Now, we know that that is the mental pattern we have seen over and over and over again. Yet, there are people with this TCD, terminal cognitive dissonance, who can be confronted with this fact that these guys are drawn towards gun-free zones and places that have zero tolerance, where nobody can have a gun, and do this carnage and mayhem, and preferably seem to look for women and children. That's who most often are shot and killed, women and children. And they go there, and we see this time and time again. I mean, it's a consistent pattern. And yet they insist upon keeping gun-free zones and letting everybody know that this is a gun-free zone. That you can come here and commit your mayhem with impunity. Because we don't want any guns at all around our children. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. That is murder by negligence. The people who impose those rules are killing these children. Because they know that there are crazy people out there. It's like, rubbing yourself down with blood and meat and diving in shark-infested water without a shark suit and being surprised when the sharks attack you. I can't understand, but yet I do, the cognizance that is dissonating in their mind, that is conflicting in their mind, so that they do this thing. Now, that's an example of this cognitive dissonance. There's far greater examples, much more common examples amongst almost everybody who's even listening to this. And we have elements of this and degrees of this cognitive dissonance. It's not always TCD, it's not always terminal, because some of you will repent and turn around and do something different. But you have to be willing to look at yourself and all the things that you do and how you relate to each other and how you do all these things. And how you get the energy to do all the things that you do. And so one of the topics that we're going to be talking about for the next couple of weeks on Keys of the Kingdom is kings and priests. And we read it this morning on one of our earlier radio shows, which I haven't posted yet, but it's at Liberty Radio, that we had at least part of the second hour on this subject. But if you go and look up in Revelations, you'll see a reference to, "And hath made us kings and priests unto God and his Father. To him be the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen." Now, this is John writing in Revelations saying that we have been made kings and priests. So immediately, guys, interpret this that we don't need any more ministers because we're all kings and priests. For one thing, you have to have this idea that you are the us he's talking about, that you are one of John, one of the us of the early Christian followers of the church. But you don't meet any of the qualifications of us for the most part. Most of you don't qualify as us, because you're not doing what the us back then was doing. You don't even know what the us back then were doing. And it's absolutely amazing. Now, many of you have listened to this show before, and you've already heard me point out the fact that Herod was baptizing people into the kingdom of heaven. John the Baptist was doing it. Jesus' apostles also did it. And anyone who received the baptism of Christ was cast out of the Corban system of the temple. They couldn't go to the local synagogue. They couldn't go to the temple to obtain welfare, aid, assistance. Like the blind man had aid for years because he was blind and he qualified for government assistance. And that assistance was paid to him through Corban. Often it's old age people, widows that would be taken care of by their system of Corban. Today you have Social Security in this country and social insurance in other countries, but it's all basically the same system. They take some money from everybody and that goes into a treasury and then it goes back to you to help you out. That's Corban. Corban has been around for thousands and thousands of years, but there are two different kinds of Corban. One is a free will offering that you give because you love your neighbor as yourself. And this was the Corban in the days of Moses, was free will Corban. But then there is another Corban, which is the Corban of the Pharisees and the Corban of Herod, which you have to pay in because you signed up and scribes have written your name down and you become a part of a system of Corban. Now, they had the same system or same type of system in Rome, and they called it Corban also, although it was spelled with a Q instead of a C. Corban is actually not spelled with a C. That's the way we transliterate it, but it was spelled with a Kuf, which is a Hebrew letter. But in any case, it's all the same. It's all the same type of system, except for some Corban systems operate by faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty. And some Corban systems operate by contracts, covenants, and constitutions. Create a constitution, establish a group of people that represent you, and decide how much people are going to get and how much they're not going to get, and how much you're going to give and how much you don't have to give. And that is the ones who rule over you. And then you sign up and sign in to this system, become a member of this system, and then you have to pay in what they say you owe, and you get back entitlements, benefits. And these men are the benefactors who exercise authority one over the other. They don't actually give you what is theirs. They give you what they took away from your neighbor. But the truth is, the church only gives you what they took away from the neighbor. It's the manner of the taking that makes the difference. In the church, and according to Christ, you had to be free will offerings. According to Moses, you had to be free will offerings. Even according to the Quran, these were gifts and free will offerings. So all these religions, and Sikhs, if you go back in the Hindus and certainly the Buddhists, they're all free will offerings that help take care of the needy of your society. And this is pure religion. Impure religion is when you operate according to the Corban of Herod and the Corban that at Rome eventually practiced, where they forced the contributions of the people. And this simple little difference between those two creates this cognitive dissonance in your mind. You want to think that you're following Christ. You want to think you're priests and kings. But you give somebody else the power to decide what you will give into the needy of your society and how much will be and who will receive what you give as the needy of society. You've given that power to somebody else. And of course, you can be a hooker, a prostitute. You can be a degenerate. You could be a child molester. And you can still get welfare. And you can be a murderer. You can be a lech. You can be an evil, lazy, no good for nothing individual, and you will still get your welfare from one system. But according to the system set up by Moses and according to the system set up by Christ, you don't have to give them. You don't have to support the wicked. The wicked need to go support themselves, so they create a government. Problem is, all you decent people, all you good people, because of the terrible advice of your existing modern church, which has lost its way, have gone and signed up for the system established by men for the wicked. And so therefore you're not priests and kings. You can elect priests and kings, and you call them government, but you yourself are not priests and kings anymore. Now, if you want to be a part of that salvation of Christ and the priests and kings that he hath made, you have to repent and turn around and do something different. You have to start taking care of the needy of your society. Now, we have a congregation out in the Midwest, and the minister has announced to them that he's going to resign because he doesn't really feel that they are being priests and kings. He doesn't really feel that they have started. They on paper they've started a congregation and they have done some good and some exercising, but it's kind of like the peace on earth, goodwill towards men that we see at Christmas time. It's a token, peace on earth, goodwill to men. It's only for that one day in 365. It's kind of like a ceasefire. Today we're going to be nice and we're going to help people. We're going to do this little charitable project, but the rest of the time, any widows and orphans will just have to starve to death. Even though the ones we know of and the ones we don't know of. And we don't really want to know anymore, so we're not even going to look for them. We're not going to contribute to that minister to help him look. We're not going to tithe to him. We've already been saved, and we already believe this, and that's as far as we have to go. But that isn't what Christ said. Christ, John the Baptist, said you had to turn around, you had to do something completely different. In order to be kings and priests, you have to take on the responsibility of government. You have to finance the government. You have to finance the benefits of government. You have to provide for the needy of your society. You have to provide for the protection of your society. We see the antithesis of that in a society that says, we're not only going to not protect these children that are in school, we're not going to let the teachers that are already there and are competent and capable of handling a firearm, we're not going to let them to even bring a firearm there. And then we're going to let everybody know that there's nobody there at the school who has a firearm. I saw an instance where one soldier went there in his fatigues, which he's not really supposed to do, and he is standing there at the school guarding it. But he can't bring a gun on the campus because of zero tolerance, so he's standing there unarmed. Now, I personally carried a gun. Worked a lot of off-duty cops, worked at this particular bank. And we'd wear a uniform. And I carried a gun. But I was walking around inside the building usually by myself. At different times we had more cops, off-duty cops, on duty there, but a lot of times I was on duty by myself, although Friday nights there were other cops there besides me. But when I was there all alone, somebody asked something about my job and what I was to do. And I says, when you, what my job here is mostly is that if you hear a loud bang, everybody should look over towards me, and if there's a big red spot developing on the front of my uniform, then you know that you're being robbed. Because I'm just standing there, everybody can see me, the bad guys can see me, they can walk in and shoot me, and then they can rob the bank. Because that's what you have to do. I'm kind of a vague deterrent, because I'm armed and visible. If you really want to protect the bank and the people and the children, allow your teachers to carry concealed weapons. Simple as that. Okay, people can't see that. They can't understand that. Now let's go back to this other thing. If you really want to take care of the needy of your society, the true needy of your society, not everybody who wants, not the lazy, not the immoral, not the degenerate, not the unforgiving, not the wicked, but the truly needy, the decent people that have needs that arise every once in a while. Somebody dies, somebody gets sick, somebody falls off a ladder. If you really want to help them, you have to gather together in groups. And you have to find those good people first. And how do you know they're good people? Well, they want to find you. They want to gather together with you and help you if you need help. They're not coming because they're already in need. They're coming because somebody else who is decent and hardworking and moral might need help. And so they gather together with those people. And they can't keep track because they get busy. You know, things happen during the day. So, and during the week, you get busy. So you create a minister, and he counts to 10. He checks with his family, checks with that family, checks with that family. Now, that's going to take his time. He becomes eventually, like the first century church, health, education, and welfare. He is the government of the people, for the people, and by the people, because he can help the people with what the people give him to help each other. Who's in charge of that kind of government? It's a free assembly. You can leave anytime you want. You don't have to pay anything in. There's no regular dues that you have to give. This is the system that was created by Christ and the system that was created by Moses. You give according to the service of that minister you have picked. You're the government. You're the power of that government. You have the purse strings. You're a king who decides who is going to get welfare and who's not. Now, you give it freely to that minister, then he goes out and gives it. If he misuses it, you let him know. Say, I don't think you should have given it to that person. And he tells you why he did. And maybe he didn't have all the information. Maybe you don't have all the information. But you have now a team that's working. Both working for Christ. You as a king and priest, because you decide who gets the welfare. You're king because you're part of the protection. Why were kings originally elected? Well, we'll talk about that when we return to the second half of the show. But what is a king? What is a priest? We need to know what these offices are if we are to be kings and priests, free men under God, free women under God. We need to know what that is. So when we get back, we'll talk about what are kings and priests and how does this free government of God actually operate.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Yeah, we're talking about this Corban, which was is actually the word sacrifice. It was used to take care of the needy of society. And why was this so important? It was important because this sacrifice that we do for one another is what binds us together. It binds us not because we owe a debt back, but because of honor and because of righteousness and because of the fact that somebody has done something for us. The good man wants to do something back. And so this, in order to do something as a favor back after having a favor done for them, they're going to want to keep track of that person's needs. They're going to want to know what else that person may need. It's a very simple concept, and it is the only way a free society can actually operate. And so there has to be kind of a record through this system. And it's not just a little congregation, but it's a whole nation that's going to do this. So the ministers need to networking with other ministers. And it works like the contributions that you do to your minister. You know, like say there's a flood 10 miles away or 100 miles away. And you know of some of the people in the flood. Do you just send them mail to random addresses that are in the flood area? No, you give it to your minister. Your minister gets together with other ministers, and they put together a fund. They pick somebody they trust to take those funds and supplies. And once they're operating in that way on a day-to-day basis, when big disasters happen, it's just a matter of magnifying that effort of rescue. And we see the first century church doing that right away in Acts. And this is the way Israel operated for hundreds of years. And they didn't need a king. They didn't need someone to exercise authority and rule over them, because it says there was no kings in Israel. But what they're actually saying is that every household was kings. They were all kings. They were all priests, because they all were taking care of the sacrifice in their family and giving it accordingly to men that they trust to make sure that it was handled properly. Now, the other system of Corban comes along when people begin to become jealous and envious and slothful. And so you end up having these two systems, both Corban, both requiring sacrifice, both requiring ministers to minister that sacrifice. But one is by force and violence, and the other one is by love. And so you have one was a result of choice and charity, and the other was a result of force and forfeiture. One was from free people of virtue, and the other one was from subjects of vice, because it was vanity and greed and wantonness that allowed that system to be born. People coveted their neighbor's goods, and so they entered into this system hoping that the men who could exercise authority would take from their neighbor and make sure their neighbor contributed. It's like the phrase you hear in the movies, no one left behind. And in politics, no one left behind. They want to make sure everybody pays their fair share. And so they're willing to force everybody. But in order to do that, they have to give somebody the power to exercise that force. And so through your covetousness, if you're not wanting to let others be free, you yourself are brought into bondage, which is what Proverbs 23 is talking about. Proverbs 1 is talking about. One was called a tithe, the other one was called a tax. One was based on a covenant with God, taking care of your neighbor and loving your neighbor, and the other one was based on a covenant with men who say they are gods. They have a right to decide for you what is right, what is wrong, what is good, and what is evil. They are not only deciding for themselves, like Adam and Eve did, but they are deciding for you like Cain did. And if you don't like their decision, they hit you over the head. They kick in your door. They beat you. It is, these two systems are antithesis of each other. One will deliver you into freedom. The other one will deliver you into bondage. It's because one, you are concerned about the freedom of your neighbor. And the other one, you are not concerned about his freedom. You don't even care if he is in bondage as long as you get your way. One was about a willingly obeying your Father who art in heaven, and the other one was about obeying and giving your allegiance to your Father who is on earth, who you will pray to for your benefits. One requires that you care about your neighbor's rights, family, goods, as much as you care about your own. And the other does not require you to love anyone, but only your compliance and allegiance and obedience. One of the systems requires love and patience and free will offerings, regular sacrifice and virtue, like forgiveness and patience. And the other one just requires submission and compliance and your compelled offerings. And this is the division of the world between the world of Christ and the world that Christ's world is not a part of. And unfortunately, most people, even though they think they are Christians, are a part of the second and not a part of the first. And this creates that TDC, or TCD. Yeah, there's my dyslexia showing up. TCD, terminal cognitive dissonance. You have two conflicting ideas, that it's okay to force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare, at the same time to pretend that you love your neighbor as yourself. It's okay to take away the freedom and rights of your neighbor and still think that you have a right to your own freedom and rights. You don't. You have even taken, as we said, as an example with the schools, you've taken away the right of the teachers to protect the students that you have given them, and then told everybody that nobody is here at this school who can protect these kids. So if you want to waltz in here and shoot people, you go right ahead and do it. Because we don't want anybody here that can stop you. Oh, now they're talking about getting security guards in some of these places. And they might hire a security guard to do that. But it'll be back to that example I gave you when I was doing security work in a bank. As I was just there so that when you see me dead, you know you're being robbed. Because I'm standing there with a uniform. You know, I went to other banks occasionally, you know, offering protection for people. I would go into another bank with people who were carrying large sums of money. And I was the armed guy, but I was usually always in the uniform. But when I went into several of the banks, there were plainclothesmen. Their guards did not wear uniforms. They had a badge, but it was on the inside of their coat. I knew who they were. They always came over and said hi, and I made sure that I stood well away from the teller. I just brought the people to the bank. And we could chit-chat and talk. But they were plain clothes. Why? Because you don't want... It puts you at a decided disadvantage if you have this big badge and uniform that makes you visible. So the idea... And then I can guarantee you that you're not going to be hiring any security guards that make as much as the teachers, or have as much training as the teachers, or as much education as the teachers. The key is to arm the teachers, but people can't see that. Well, they also can't see that their system of public schools themselves are socialism. You have that free education available to your kids because you've taken away the rights of your neighbor to keep their home unless they contribute to your child's education. That is Antichrist. That is anti-Moses. That is coveting your neighbor's goods. That is anti-Ten Commandments. You covet your neighbor's house. He must pay in or he's not going to be able to keep his house. And in your cognitive dissonance, you cannot see that you're a part of the wicked. You are the wicked. You are not those that love their neighbor as themselves. You want your benefits. You want your free education. Until the 1900s, most of the education in America was paid for by private funds. It was done by private schools. Even the early public schools were not entirely funded by government. It was only partially funded by government. And usually it was a tax like on tobacco or something. But even that was opening a door, opening a can of worms. You have to go back to private funded education. And really, you need to go back to homeschooling and then form co-ops that add to that educational experience. But the ones in charge are you priests and kings. But right now, you're slaves and servants. You're human resources. You're not priests and kings. You don't have ministers that operate by faith, hope, and charity, that take care of the health, education, and welfare of your society. You don't have those anymore. You have only ministers who operate by fear and force and forfeiture. That's the only ministers you have. The ministers in your so-called Christian churches, they don't take care of the social welfare like the early church did. They don't take care of hardly any of the welfare. Oh, they'll do a little token stuff, but it's like Christmas. It's a war out there between righteousness and unrighteousness. And on Christmas, you have a ceasefire. For one day, for one season, you have a ceasefire. Oh, we're going to give to charity. We're going to give food bank. We're going to give food drives at Christmas. Because it's Christmas. It's the time to give. The other 11 months out of the year, well, you guys are on your own. Except for Thanksgiving, we'll give you a big feed at Thanksgiving. But if you really need from day to day, we're gonna send you to the men who call themselves benefactors, who will force you to contribute, who will take your sons and daughters, who will take and take and take and take. Those are the only benefactors we'll send you to. But we'll tell you that you're a Christian. We'll tell you that you love Christ. We'll tell you that you're following in the ways of Christ, that you're even saved, we'll tell you. But we're not going to actually do what the early church did. We're not going to actually do what Christ said to do. We're not going to actually do what we see the apostles doing in Acts. Taking care of the daily ministration of the widows and the orphans of our society. We're not going to do that. It's right there in the text, but they don't see it. Why don't they see it? Cognitive dissonance. They can't see the fact that what they're doing today is contrary to what Christ said to do. It conflicts with the gospel of the kingdom. They can't see that. The question is, can you see that? Because if you can't see it, and you continue not to see it, then you have TCD, terminal cognitive dissonance. Your sin will remain. If you think you already know, if you think you already are saved, and that you already are doing what Christ called you to do, and that I am all wet, and that it's absolutely okay to covet your neighbor's goods as long as you do it through government, you're not a Christian. You're not in compliance with Christ. You're actually in opposition to Christ. So, some of you don't homeschool because you don't have kids. Are you helping others homeschool? Are you helping others educate their children at home? Single parents find it very difficult to do that. I tell you, when you start to do that, when you start turning around and conforming to the ways of Christ, something happens. Something mystical happens. In your spirit, you begin to see more. You've acted upon the truth that you have received, and God gives you more truth. And you act upon that, and He gives you more truth, and He gives you power. I would be dead today if I didn't act upon the truth that He gave me. And I haven't always done it as well as I should. But the more and more I do it, the more and more He blesses me. But we can't be cowards about this. We can't be lazy about this. We have to begin to turn around and see that we have gone the wrong way. And then when we walk this way, and live this way, we may become kings and priests. In these two opposing systems, these conflicting systems, in the first, you are kings and priests. But in the second, you are back in the bondage of Egypt, where your sons and daughters have to pay a portion of their labor to men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. And they decide how much you give and how much you get back. And they are corrupted by the power that you have given them. And there's another mysterious thing that happens. in that society. They want to see you dead. They want the ultimate power over you. Like Cain, they will want you dead and prefer you dead. And they will devour you, and they'll devour everything you have, and they'll drain it away. And we see that happening with things like inflation and other aspects of our economy on the verge of collapse. This is the way you will go if you make that single choice on how you take care of your neighbor. Can you do it by free will offerings? Absolutely. Can you do it by faith, hope, and charity alone? Absolutely. It's been done for thousands of years. It's going to be hard because you've become addicted to these benefits. And there's no way out of having to pay into those benefits. Eventually, they will cast you out of that system, but by the time they do, things will be very bad, just like they were in Egypt, just like they were even at the time of Christ. There were riots in the streets at the time of Christ, which Christ even refers to. One of them in particular was over money taken out of their social welfare. Their social security fund had been pilfered in order to do a government project, bringing an aqueduct into Jerusalem. I can show you pictures of some of the pipe that they made out of stone. And that work project alone caused riots because they knew they took the money out of the social security money, the Corbin money. And they were upset that you were squandering away the money that was there for their security, for their social security. Now, that's a matter of history. Now, they don't teach you that in school. When I did a tour around the country speaking, I showed people pictures of that stone, one of the stones. They haven't all survived. But one of those, it's very interesting, small pieces of, I mean, it was a pretty good-sized piece of pipe. It was a pretty good-sized opening. But it was carved out of stone, so it was actually like a square thing. But the inside where the water ran was like a pipe. And they, you know, it had edges on it, and recessed edges, so that it would fit together with the next one and fit together with the next one after that. And they just put them together. And then they ran water through them. And you could get water, which is a good thing. But the people were upset because they took that money from their social welfare fund. Now, your social welfare fund is almost completely gone, but where did the money go? It wasn't that they necessarily pilfered it, but it's going to drug addicts. It's going to the wicked. It's going to all kinds of people who don't deserve it and shouldn't have it and should actually be working. And there's no discretion. There's no real charity that strengthens the poor. It's a charity that weakens the poor and increases the poor. And all these people get to vote for more and more benefits. And they're draining and draining and draining society. And it's going to continue that way because you've moved in from a republic into a democracy. But the problem is that can all change if you repent and start trying to establish the Corbin of Christ, which is what all your churches should be doing. Start building up the families, strengthening the families, strengthening our sense of charity for one another. Not charity just to anybody, but charity to one another. Become the health, education, and welfare of your society through faith, hope, and charity, and you will become that alternative government. And that's going to take a lot of work and a lot of faith by those who start down that path now, because there are very few people on that path. Wide is the way to destruction. Most of the people want to go that way. But some of you are starting to wake up. And so we have this thing we call congregations of record, core groups. All they are is 10 families who gather together and say, let's see if we can do this. And some of them are kind of spread out, but they're gathering together in the hopes that they find all those other people who want to live by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. I've said this many times, I can find all kinds of people who want to be free. I can't find all kinds of people who want to be righteous. Very hard to find people who want to be righteous and are willing to make the sacrifice that righteousness calls for. That is hard to find. People don't believe it's possible. We're going to have to find some that will do it and show them that it is possible. Because that's what the early church was doing, and that was a remarkable event. that's coming out at Pentecost saying, okay, I'm going to waive my right to all those benefits. I'm going to get baptized of Christ. And I'm going to waive my right to all the money that I paid into Social Security. And I'm going to start living by faith, hope, and charity. Now, right now, you can go get baptized by one of our ministers, and you're still going to have to pay your tally of bricks because Pharaoh hasn't said he's going to let us go yet. You've seen evidence that they do make allowances for anybody who actually takes care of one another through faith, hope, and charity. The Amish do, and they have got a written-in exemption from the health care. If we would do that, if we would actually start to do that, gather together in congregations, you would get an exemption too. But more important than that, you would tap into an inexhaustible source of energy, an inexhaustible source of life. And what little skills you now are beginning to develop would grow and grow and grow. Why? Because you would be willing to give up your life for others. If you develop skills and knowledge and ability just to make yourself safe, you will stifle life in you. You have to do it to make others safe. The world will do just the opposite. They will take all their children and they will put them in locked buildings. They will take away all means of protection of those children. And then they will invite in any maniac who can come, because they'll tell them where they are. And they'll invite them in to come kill these children, because there's nobody here that can stop you. They actually have done that now for years. And now when the children die, what do they say? We have to disarm everybody in America so that nobody in America has guns. Except for us. Except for our masters. That is a recipe for a Holocaust like you've never seen before. Now, they're not going to get everybody's guns. They're just not going to, it's not going to happen. But they don't really care. They're interested in taking life, not giving it. You have to be the antithesis. You have to come together to give life. And then you'll have life more abundant. But we'll talk more about that on another day. And if you have any questions, I want you to join us on the Living Network at hisholychurch.org. And we'll try to get more and more topics and show you more and more things. There's a lot to learn about what Christ was really preaching, what the early church was really doing. And we would love to learn that with you. But you have to start gathering together in real congregations. I'm telling people, I don't think they always believe me on the network, that most of what happens on the network does not happen in email. We don't share everything in email. It happens in actual congregations of record and actual people that are gathering. Even those that are spread out are gathering. And ultimately, it's God who's going to enlighten us. But when we come together for the good of others, not just for the good of ourselves, God's light shines much brighter. So until we meet again, may peace be upon your house and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.